What's going on, y'all? This is Gabe Macias with Game Time Elite Training, and you're listening to the Coach D Podcast.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are, near or far, high or low. You're listening to the Coach D Podcast, and listeners, finally I'm able to tap in with this extremely, how do you even say, he's just super high IQ. He has innovative drills, but listeners, you know how we do on the Coach D Podcast. We have to introduce these special guests the right way. So without further ado, let me drop the music and introduce this amazing guest the right way. Listeners, stepping on the court, we have a special guest joining us. Our guest is a highly accomplished skills trainer who has made a significant impact on the world of basketball by enhancing athletes' abilities across various disciplines. With an unparalleled expertise in innovative basketball training, our guest has become renowned for their ability to unlock the full potential of athletes and helping them to reach new heights in their performance. We're going to be speaking about the world of skill enhancement as well as the correct ways to develop athletes. Listeners, please, I'm hyped, I'm excited. Give a warm welcome to Coach Gabe.
Man, what's going on, Coach D? That was a dope intro, man. I wasn't expecting that. I felt like I was in Chicago, man, in 1995, man.
Hey, there we go. There we go.
Appreciate you, man. For real, that was super cool.
No, likewise. I mean, before we even get started, Cole, just talk to me where you're at right now in terms of how you're feeling physically and mentally right now.
Yeah, no, I'm feeling good. Been a really busy summer, you know, just training my athletes, and I got to travel to Miami for a little bit and see Coach Coleman Ayers of By Any Means Basketball and just check out his summer academy and just see how things are going over there. And
right.
Connected with a lot of other coaches as well that were over there kind of interning for the summer academy and stuff. So no, I've been good. I've been super good. Just busy, just trying to, you know, get things going on our end with our business out here in San Diego.
Indeed. And we're definitely going to get into that later on in the podcast. Mm-hmm. But a huge congrats to what you've got going on out there, because I remember in our conversation that you just opened a new basketball gym out there in San Francisco, I believe, or you opened up a new gym, right?
So we're located in San Diego. We opened up our gym about 2 years ago. Nice. It's been a beautiful process, and it's been awesome just to have our own space. You know, we don't got to worry about you know, anybody kicking us out of the gym or not being
exactly
able to at certain times. You know, we're able to do sessions whenever we want, you know, so it's been a blessing to have that for sure.
Nice. And we're definitely going to be speaking about that later on in the podcast. So before we even speak about the coach that you've become today as we speak, kind of, Coach Gabe, take us back to a very young, short, maybe not as athletic, not as long Gabe, who was kind of still finding his ways as a hooper. And who was it, you know, that put a basketball in your hands, or how did you get introduced to the beautiful game of basketball?
So my dad was a coach. He pretty much been coaching since I was born, and coached before I was born.
Nice.
So I was kind of just like, you know, introduced to the game early on. Right. And honestly, at first, you know, I didn't really like it at first. You know, I wasn't really like a sports kid to start, you know, my younger ages. I'd always be at the gym with them. You know, it'd be cool to just kind of check it out and see what was going on. But I didn't start playing until like seriously playing and taking it seriously until I was about like 10 or 11 years old.
Okay.
And that's when I kind of like really like fell in love with the game. Like I played, you know, when I was a little bit younger, you know, six to eight years old, I was playing a little bit, but I didn't really like it. I kind of took a break from sports. I did like soccer, football, American football growing up too. And, you know, I didn't really find myself in tune with sports until I got to about like 10 or 11 years old. And I really fell in love with basketball.
Right.
You know, it was cool. Yeah, no, it was cool just being around the game and just kind of learning from my dad, you know, just because he was a coach. He coached a lot of coached high school basketball, so he was a JV coach
Nice.
for a long time. And then once I got into high school, he actually became an assistant on our on my varsity team.
Right.
So it was cool having him coaching me throughout my high school career. It wasn't, obviously like the head coach, but it was
Yes.
just cool having him, there and just being able to just be a huge part of my process, and whatnot. So yeah, honestly, yeah, like I said, I didn't get into the game till I was about like 10 or 11 years old.
Man, so getting that early, or your dad being your first coach, how would you describe him as a coach? Was he quite militant? Was he kind of, offensive, defensive, skill based? Like, kind of describe that early type of coaching you got from your dad.
Yeah, no, he was a very good coach. One thing I liked is he, I mean, obviously I think it's mostly like all, dads who coach their kids, they don't take it easy on you. They're really
Absolutely.
pushing you. They're pushing you and making sure that you are, holding not only yourself accountable, but holding the others around you accountable, and
There
he
we go.
really kind of ingrained that leadership. Those leadership qualities and characteristics into me, so I kind of took like a leadership role, kind of like early on. He looked to me to kind of like push other kids around me,
Nice.
and on our team. But it was great having him as a coach. He was very focused on you, just kind of like taking it one step at a time,
Right.
just kind of building from the ground up. And so it was a lot of just like fundamental stuff. I try to not use that word as much anymore, but I'm just, that's kind of like the best word I could describe, just kind of just being fundamental and just building you from the ground up, so,
Right.
my process, I wasn't like, I was honestly like growing up since, I started sports late. I was a goofy kid. I wasn't
Okay.
wasn't very like athletic.
Right. No, same. Me too. Me too.
I was very goofy and I was big. I was a big kid. I was always the tallest kid
Okay.
on my team, always the tallest kid on the court. And I was tall very early on. So I didn't really grow into my body yet. And I was kind of, a goofy mover. But, as I started to get more experience and started to play more, I started to grow into my body and started to, somewhat by the time I got into eighth grade, high school, somewhat become athletic. Things started to progress. But I would honestly say I wasn't a very good basketball player till I was about in like sixth, seventh grade.
Okay.
Or at least I wouldn't consider myself, very good until I got to that around that age.
Right. So you kind of led us into our next question, because I feel like every hooper, not even hooper, every athlete, no matter what sport you play, they find that moment, whether it was hitting the game-winning shot, getting that block, calling out a defensive play, offensive play, grabbing the ball, calling a timeout, getting that first and one. There was that moment when you realized that you was nice at basketball. So for yourself, Coach Gabe, when was that moment for yourself where you realized that, like, I can go a long way with this basketball? Like, me and basketball just gel so well.
Yeah, so I wouldn't say like I was like a great player where like I knew, okay, I'm gonna be, this professional player, this D1 player.
Right.
But I always knew that I could play at the next level.
Okay.
I always knew that I could, be, at least get to, a college basketball player or be just a good high school basketball player. I would say probably that, that was always my dream, obviously, right?
Yep.
I probably started realizing that maybe by the time, like I was a sophomore or junior in high school.
Okay.
That it could be, a real possibility. Just because, I felt like, and this is something, coaches always told me, is just I had a great like feel for the game.
Nice.
I was a good just understanding, I had a great basketball IQ,
Yes.
and understood how to just play within a role. I wasn't a player who was going to go out and give you 20 points, a night. I wasn't like a scorer. My role as a player was always just knocking down shots when I was open, making sure that I was making sure that I was able to always make the right play, you know.
Right.
So whether that was attacking a closeout, whether I was making the extra pass, whether that was, setting ball screens, down screens, whatever it was, I was always in the right spots at the right time.
Right.
So I was never like a guy that could just go get you a bucket anytime you wanted. Even though I felt like, I could at certain points, but that just wasn't my role on my team. My team, we had some very good players and guys who, that was their role.
Right.
So I was just kind of just filling in, where I could, and just, trying to, what's the right word? Looking to master my role, So,
Yes.
yeah, that's what I would kind of say, kind of type of player I was.
Okay. I think the biggest thing that I mean there's quite a few things that I just noticed from your page. I mean the one of the things that I absolutely love, Coach, and it's very difficult. It's not as easy to find, pages like yourself where you're covering drills, you're covering basketball reads, but it's so you're one, you're seeing the kids have fun. Two, you're seeing the kids think. They're not just like thinking of, they're not moving like robots, like, okay, the coach told me to do this, double cross and finish. No, they're actually having to read the game and they're scoring, and that first layup might look different to the second layup. Like it's very innovative drills, which is what kind of drew me to your page, But in terms of the coach that you are today, what made you want to transition from a player to a coach?
Yeah, kind of like I mentioned earlier, just growing up, I always kind of found myself being a leader.
Right.
And, I love to work out. I would work on my game, every single day, multiple times per day.
Nice.
Get up at, yeah, my dad would take me to school at 5 a.m. so I could get a workout in before school. Then I would work out after school, and then I'd work out again at night, I always kind of found myself in the gym. And through that, I started attracting players. Like a couple of our teammates, they would come to the gym with us at 5 a.m. And I
Nice.
would find myself like leading those workouts. Like I would be the one that would put us all through drills.
What's up?
And I started, training, just players that played on my team, some of my best friends. We would always just get in, and I always kind of found myself, just leading those training sessions and workouts and stuff. And I would say probably like around like high school. I would even say a little bit earlier, like middle school. Like I always kind of wanted to do something with sports, and I actually originally wanted to be like a physical therapist.
Okay.
And it's because I didn't really like realize like, basketball training could be a living.
Okay.
You could make a living off of
That makes
it,
sense,
and so
yeah.
like I was like, you know what? I just kind of want to go, like the traditional route, get a quote unquote, real job
Right,
and go,
right.
do something of that sort. So I always kind of had my eyes set on like early high school, and around that age I was going to be a physical therapist. But
Okay.
started as I started to get older, I started to realize, there was a lot of people who were basketball trainers and doing it full time for like a living,
Indeed.
and I was like, wow, I think, this is something I could do possibly. And it's something I love to do already. I was loving training, my teammates and whatnot. And then, eventually my dad, he was coaching, he had like a, he coached high school at the time, but then he also had a program that he ran back home for like the youth. So
Okay.
he was coaching a bunch of like youth teams. And I want to say this was about the time I was like a junior in high school.
Right.
I would just be staying, working in the gym, after the practices and stuff. I'd get gym access and I'd be working out after practices. And some of the players that were in the program, the younger players, they would see me and stuff, and they would ask, hey, can you train me and stuff? And I didn't
Wow.
really think too much of it because like whenever I trained somebody, I was always working out with them,
Yes,
so I never
yes.
actually trained somebody on their own where I was just only focused on them, right?
Right.
I was like, yeah, I'll do it. And so I started training a couple kids that were in my dad's program. Around I was about 16, 17 years old. Started training them and stuff. I fell in love with it. I liked it a lot. And that's when I kind of finally realized, I was like, oh wow, I can actually, maybe do this. This could be a career path. And I still wasn't sure. I still kind of had my eyes set on like physical therapy and stuff like that. But I always had like in the back of my head, this could maybe be something.
Right.
Then kind of fast forward into like my senior year of high school. My dad, well, actually, backtrack a little bit. So in my senior year, I ended up getting a bunch of interest from NAIA schools, D3 schools.
Okay.
Picked up a couple offers from some D3 schools. And I was going to be going to the University of Laverne. That's why I kind of had my eyes set.
Okay.
They're a D3 school in Southern California.
Nice.
And then I ended up getting injured my senior year. I dislocated my kneecap and
Oof.
Fractured my tibia. So the D3 schools that recruited me, especially like Laverne, you know, they pretty much told me like, hey, like, you know, we don't offer athletic scholarships. We don't, you know, you're not allowed, you can't redshirt at our school and stuff. And they said it's pretty much would be like, you know, if you want to come here to play basketball, it's going to be a waste of your first year because
Right.
you're not going to be able to, you're going to lose a year
Right.
of eligibility pretty much, right? So they were like, you know, you should probably just go JUCO, go the JUCO route, and, you know, we're going to keep in touch with you and whatnot. And so I ended up going to a junior college. And as kind of like after I kind of got hurt my senior year, my dad was, you know, offered me, you know, to coach, you know, some of the teams.
Okay.
So I started actually coaching some of the teams. I was training some of the kids in the program. I would do this thing where before practices would start, I would do training sessions. So kids would come in and they would, you know, train with me before their practice times. So I would be, you know, training, you know, probably like around like 6 to 10 kids.
Right.
Be training them. And then we would have practice later that night. And so I, you know, I started getting more traction, started, you know, doing all that. And I really just fell in love with it. Then fast forward, I get into college and I go to Grossmont College, a junior college in San Diego. I have to sit out my first year. You know, I redshirted because I wasn't fully healthy. Still, I was still recovering from my previous knee injury.
Right.
And so I'm planning to play the next year. I get back, I'm healthy. I start practicing with the team halfway through the year, looking good. And I was like, you know, yeah, I'm definitely going to be playing next year. And so fast forward, kind of wrapping up my freshman year of college, you know, just getting ready for in the off season, getting ready, preparing for the next year. We have like open gym. I'm going to a bunch of open gyms, working out, you know, just getting prepared.
Right.
And I get to an open gym that I'm supposed to be going to. And I show up late, and I didn't have a chance to warm up. And so that's kind of my always my biggest thing, just because I've been through so many injuries throughout my career.
Yeah.
One thing I forgot to mention is I've had 7 major knee injuries.
Wow.
So,
okay.
You know, so all the way from 7th grade all the way till I was a freshman, you know, in college, I had 7 major knee injuries.
Wow.
So my thing was always getting warmed up. I wanted to make sure I'm taking care of my body. So, of course, I show up late. And I just jump right into playing, and all I so I had 6 major knee injuries in my left leg, and then I had 1 major knee injury in my right leg, which happened when I show up to this open gym. I'm not warmed up, jump on the court, I play, and all I did is I just came to a jump stop, drove hard into the paint, came to a jump stop, and I felt just like a pop in my knee,
right,
and it didn't feel right, and I kept trying to play, but just kind of got worse as things went on, and ended up going to the doctor, getting an MRI, and it turned out that I tore my meniscus.
Wow.
So this was like my actual, like my good knee. And, you know, I just battled back from freaking 6 to 8 months of sitting out my freshman year of college and coming back, getting fully healthy, getting ready to play my freshman year of college, or I guess my second year of college, which would have been my freshman season, I guess.
Right.
They told me, you know, it'd be another 6 to 8 month recovery and whatnot. And I was like, man, do I really want to do this again? You know, I just did it again, and I've done this pretty much 7 times, you know. And so I was like, is this, you know, what I want to do? And I
Right.
was like, honestly, I don't know if I want to be in college for 4 to 5, you know, or sorry, I would have had to register another year. So that means I'll probably be in college for 6 years. And I was like, do I really want to do that?
Right.
And try to pursue a playing career. And I just was like, no, I don't. So I just decided to kind of get into coaching and training kind of like full time. And I was still going to school, and I was still kind of on, you know, on the fence. I was like, do I want to be a physical therapist? Or do I want to, you know, pursue basketball training?
Right.
And I decision, you know, I was like, honestly, I'm not really learning anything in college. You know, everything I was learning, I could have learned, you know, myself. I could have just taught myself. And it wasn't, you know, beneficial, I thought. And so I decided to actually drop out of college once I decided I wasn't going to play the next year. And I just pursued basketball training kind of full time. I had some other jobs on the side, actually. I
Okay.
was working at I was working at a gym, kind of like front desk type deal. I'm at a gym. And so I was doing that, but I was also just training. And I decided, you know what, I'm going to pursue this thing, you know, full time. I'm going to work this job and pursue that at the same time. So that's what I ended up doing, is I ended up pursuing, you know, training full time.
Right.
And I guess that kind of got me to, you know, where I am today.
Man, see, so just talk about, because I mean, that just shows one, you know, because I'm just big on, you know, anything you do, not just whether it's coaching or basketball as a player, just anything you do, you've got to be driven and led by purpose. And I mean, considering you had that many knee injuries, Coach Gabe, and for you to still come back, and I'm sure there was moments when, you know, whether you was in a hospital, whether you was in your room doing rehab, just thinking like, should I pick another sport, or like, is basketball really it for me? I mean, this is the fourth time this happened. This is the fifth time this happened. So the fact that you're still here to this day, just one, just shows character that you have, and two, just how much you love the game of basketball, man. So I mean, just for yourself, like, what kept you in it? You know, because a lot of players, especially getting those types of offers from colleges, think, oh man, this is perfect. Like this could be my ticket to one, get a education, but two, you know, hoop at a pretty high level. But like, for yourself, what kept you in it, you know, during those dark times?
Yeah, honestly, man, it was hard. There was so many
Yeah,
times
I
where I
bet,
wanted to
man.
quit. I wanted to quit, you know, and I used to tell my best friend all the time, bro, like, I'm quitting, man. I'm done with this, bro.
Right,
Like, I
right.
do this, you know, and he kind of, you know, helped me kind of get through those times, but it was hard, man. There was so many times where I really did just wanted to give it up, you know, just because I felt like, you know, it was like this just keeps happening. It just happening over and over again. You know, but I decided that, you know, I wanted to kind of go down knowing that I didn't like necessarily like quit on it, you know. I wanted to keep fighting and just know that I gave it everything I had,
There we go.
and which I think I did, you know. And it just got to a point in time where I was so, you know, I thought training and coaching was more fulfilling than playing at the time.
Right.
And I was like, you know what, I'm not giving up on the game. I feel like I can direct my purpose and my attention somewhere else, you know, on athletes, on other athletes instead of myself, because there would be times where I was, you know, training kids and they would, you know, tell me, hey, coach, like, I'm getting so much better, you know, like I'm playing so well. And
Nice.
hearing those messages and getting, you know, talking to parents and getting that feedback, it felt better than me, you know, scoring 20 points a
I'm
game or
telling
me
you, for real.
winning a championship, right? Those messages, it
Absolutely,
resonated with me.
man.
You know, so when I got hurt the last time, I really was like, you know what, you know, I'm gonna make a push for this instead because, you know, I feel like, you know, this is my purpose, this is my calling, you know, and so that's what I decided to do. But, you know, just honestly, like that's always been my thing, is like never quitting. You know, I almost quit coaching and training, you know, a few times as well, just like because it's just running your own business. It's not the easiest thing in the
I'm
world.
telling you, it's true.
And there's been times where it's just been very rough, and I've second guessed myself, you know. But
Right.
one thing I heard a long time ago, I can't even remember where I heard it, but it's stuck with me for many, many years, is the reason why people never succeed is because they quit before it even happens, right? So, you know, if I would have quit training, you know, or a few years back, I would have never been able to, you know, get my own gym where I'm at today. If
Right,
I would have, you know,
right.
quit playing, you know, way back when in high school, I would have never been at where I'm at today, you
Right,
know.
right.
So, you know, people, a lot of times, you know, you hear it you know, body transformations, people trying to lose weight, hitting the gym, going on diets. People usually stop those things and they, you know, quit on those goals because they're not seeing results, right? But
Right.
little did they know, if they would have kept going for an extra week, an extra month, a couple more months, you
Talk
know,
about it,
that
coach.
those
Yep.
yeah, th yeah that those results would have actually hit, But because they quit, a few months earlier, a couple days early, those results, they were never able to see those results, right? And
Right.
so that's one thing that I've always thought about is like, my breakthrough moment could be right here. My breakthrough moment could be tomorrow. It could be in 6 months from now, and I'm just gonna push through until it happens, And so that's kind of always been my thought process, and that's how I've always got through, because I know that at some point down the line, I am gonna break through. No matter how tough things can get, the breakthrough moment is gonna happen sometime, before, and this is another thing that always stuck with me. Before you succeed, you will fail. You're gonna go through ups and downs,
Yes,
right?
sir. Yes,
The
sir.
path to success, the path, to reaching your dreams never comes easy. And there's
Absolutely
always
not.
Moments where things just suck, man, and it feels like it things there's never it feels like there's never going to be a bright light at the end of the tunnel,
Yes.
but there is, there is, and as long as you just stick through it, those rough patches could be for a year, multiple years, but as long as you stay with it, man, it's going to pay off in the end, and I truly believe in that. And anybody that's listening to this, man, and if you're going through a tough time right now, I believe that your breakthrough moment will be down the line. You just got to push through it, no matter how hard things are going to get.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think the biggest quote, I mean, this is probably going to be my next poster collection in my room, is there's a quote that I came across, coach, and it just stuck with me till this day. And it's a bit of a tongue twister, but the quote is, "A smooth sea never made a skilled sailor." And it's just so true, man. I mean, especially, like you said, I mean, the fact that you came across so many challenges, not just from being a player coming back from knee injuries, just once you made it into the coaching world and just, getting that order of business, it's not easy, like you said, running your own business, and there's going to be hurdles, there's going to be ups and downs, there's going to be failures on the way. But coach, you're still here. You're affecting so many players, not just in the US, around the world. And just the fact that you've got your own gym now, I mean, huge hats off to you. I mean, there must be moments where you're like, damn, like, I'm really here right now. Like basketball has taken me so many places. It's introduced me to so many people, and it's just, opened up doors that I never would have thought was even possible through basketball.
For sure. Yeah, no deal. It's been crazy, to really think about it. Sometimes I don't even take the time to really think about it. And
Right,
that's
right.
that sucks, is like I just let days kind of go on and I don't really get to reflect on like how far I've come or what I've done.
Yes.
And I think that's a lot of people. I think a lot of people kind of overlook their accomplishments and what they've been through.
Right.
And they only see, the kind of the downfalls. They only see the moment when they are struggling, but they don't see like how they got over that struggle,
There we go.
And I think that's something that's huge. And I think that's something that a lot of us have to take more time to do is just reflect and just, look back and see, you're not the same person that you were, 2 years ago, or you're not
Absolutely.
doing the same things you were doing a month ago, So it's good just to look back and kind of see how far you've come.
Right. And just in terms of, because we've got a lot of coaches, a lot of hoopers in general that just want to get better. So just for some of the hoopers that really want to gain their knowledge and just learn, when it comes to skill development, and just really measuring your progress, what are or how important is it, would you say, for players to have a strong foundation or a strong core of skills before moving on to more advanced techniques?
Yeah, that's a great question and something I've been thinking out about a lot lately. Kind of going back to your quote and what you said, can you repeat it one more time for me?
Yeah, sure, I got you. It's a smooth sea never made a skilled sailor.
Okay, yeah, good. Okay, so we can kind of relate that quote too. You can relate it to a lot of things, and I think
Right.
when you said that quote, it kind of stuck with me too. With looking from a basketball training standpoint, right? A lot of players, I think players are capable, way more capable than coaches give them credit for, right? I think as coaches, sometimes we limit players, right? We think, okay, he needs to be on level one before he can get to level two and three.
Right.
But sometimes we can throw players into level three, right? And they're able to adapt and surpass level two and three, one and two without even, you know, touching those levels because we're just throwing them into level three, right?
Yes.
I think sometimes coaches and players get caught up within going from level one, two, three, four, you know, and just so on and so forth. And I feel like we can limit players and we can hinder their growth.
Right.
You know, because we're keeping them at certain levels for so long. And, you know, you'd be surprised if you sometimes it's like and any coach, any trainer that's listening to this, you know, I do this a while ago is like sometimes I have these beginner players that we work with, players who are brand new into the game.
Okay.
I've experienced that just sometimes throwing them into more advanced classes and just having them work with more advanced players, doing more advanced skills, they progressed a lot faster than just, okay, I'm keeping them back with beginners. We're doing beginner things, you know, and that's something I've tested on myself with players that we work with.
Right.
Doing beginner things keeps them at a beginner level, right?
Okay.
And maybe they do get to that advanced level, but it's taking them a much longer time to get to that advanced level because we're babying them almost, right? But when we can throw them into the fire.
Yes, yes.
Even though it's going to look very ugly.
Yes, you know, it will. Sloppy.
It's, you know, parents might be like, dude, like, it doesn't look like he's getting better.
Right.
You know, and I tell parents, oh, trust me, he is. You know, learning, perfection isn't learning. You know, struggle is.
Wait, coach, say that again, yeah. Please.
Yes. Oof. Perfection isn't learning. Struggle is. Right?
Oh, my gosh.
A lot of times we think, oh, okay, my son's able to make 100 form shots in a row, make 100 Mikens in a row. That's learning right there. That's not learning. You know, that means that they aren't getting better because if you're perfect at something, you're not getting better at it, right? You have to be able to find challenge, right? If you're
yes.
if you're struggling at something, you know, you're only going to get better if you're challenged, right? So I think a lot of times players will limit themselves, coaches will limit players because we keep them at the basic levels.
Right.
And I'm not saying like to go super far in advance, but we can give players a lot more, you know, than what we're giving them. And, you know, sometimes, you know, maybe we do, okay, maybe we do throw a player at a level three and it's just very challenging for them and it's almost too challenging for them. Okay, then we can drop back to level two.
Right.
Then we
right.
can drop back to level one. But we almost have to look at it from like a reverse engineering standpoint, right, where we just throw them into it sooner rather than later, right?
Right.
And that's how you can speed up your development is by just doing that, you know, taking it, you know, moving up a couple levels and throwing players into more advanced stuff. That's how I think that you can, you know, speed up your development just a little bit more. So that's kind of would be my advice for players and coaches and trainers.
Man, you see, I love that because you know what's crazy, coach? This is why, I don't know, for me, timing is so beautiful because I just finished editing a video of the camp that I just did a couple weeks ago. And I took out a clip where the person's missing their layups and kept the clip where they started to make it. But I was like, you know what? Let's actually do something a bit different here. Let's actually show in the clip the person messing up, them kind of, okay, going through the footwork and then gradually how they got to that, you know? And I kind of had to highlight, this is what training looks like, you know? Because even for myself, when it gets to editing or even training, to an extent you kind of think that it needs to be perfect all the time, but that quote that you just said kind of just reignited that thought of what I was going through today in terms of perfection isn't learning, struggle is. Like I love that, coach. I love that, man.
Yeah, no, thank you. I didn't get that quote. It wasn't my quote. I got it from, I could be totally wrong, I want to say it was Chris Oliver from Basketball Immersion.
Oh yes, Immersion. Yes, yeah.
Yeah, I think that was from him. I could be wrong though, but yeah, that was a quote that stuck with me.
Right,
for sure. That's a phenomenal quote.
Indeed, indeed. And I think one of the biggest questions, and I'm sure you get asked this in abundance, coach, is shooting. You know, I feel like the most. If you look at the top three, when it comes to skills or players want to develop and get good at, it's shooting. So from your perspective, coach, and your experience, you know, whether it be with the one-to-one sessions, the camps that you've done, and some of the players that you work at in your gym, what are some common mistakes or even bad habits that you often see players make when it comes to their shooting form?
That's a good question. Good question. So, honestly, is one thing that I've been kind of toying around with lately is like, younger kids, when they have, funky forms, whatever it is, I honestly will leave them with that form until
Okay.
they get older. Because what I've noticed is players will self-correct over time. I've worked with so many players who had a wacky jump shot when
Right.
they were younger, and it's because they're not strong enough, they're not big enough yet. But as they get older, they're going to grow into it. They're going to self-correct on their own. So I don't really try to change a lot of younger player shots. I won't probably do that until they get into around maybe eighth grade or older, if I feel like it's necessary.
Right.
One thing that I feel like can be a one thing that can hurt a player's jumper is fluidity. If it's not a fluid shot, if it has a hitch, I feel like that is something that I definitely would change.
I agree. Yep.
That's one thing that can throw players off. But honestly, I'm not changing a player's jump shot until I think it needs to be changed, and at least they come to that age where it's around eighth grade or older, to change things.
Right.
Just because I feel like it can self-correct over time, and I've noticed it with athletes that I'm literally training right now. The older that they get, like I've had one player that he just started playing basketball, I think in eighth grade. He's
Okay.
now just got into his 10th grade year. I started working with him when he was in eighth grade. He could not shoot at all,
Right.
could not hit a
Right.
shot. Very bad shooter. But now, like, I kind of like let it. I was watching it, and I was like, you know what? I think he has the right base. I think he has the right fluidity. I think he just needs more time. He's a new
Right.
player. Yeah, he
Right.
like his form was actually pretty good, and just newer to him, right? And he has like a little he had maybe like a little like hitch, but it kind of like self-corrected over time.
Okay.
He self-corrected over time, and now he's a shooter, and he's been playing basketball for 2 years now, and now
Nice,
he's a
nice.
shooter, and now he's able to knock down shots. I've experienced that with a couple other players as well, is they just kind of grow into it over time. And I think sometimes coaches can hurt players by trying to change things too early, right? I think sometimes you got to just let it kind of rock out and only step in when you think it is very, very necessary to step in. With jump shots, yeah, that's kind of my advice for coaches and trainers is not to necessarily change it until you feel like it's mandatory, right? Until it's really holding them back at that older age, because the majority of the time they're able to self-correct it. And I've seen a lot of kids who are able to do that as they get older.
Right. Love it. Love it, man. And I think the second skill, I mean, at least to me, from what I've seen that a lot of players are asking me is just ball handling. Like, I want to get a Kyrie Irving handle, or, I want to learn that AI crossover from left to right, or the double cross. I mean, for yourself, coach, what drills or exercises or even concepts would you recommend for a player who is trying to improve their ball handling?
That's a great question. So I do a few different things. I mean, there's not like specific drills I could say,
Right.
just certain things or concepts, like you said, that I work on.
Right.
So first being just moving with the ball, right? A lot of times kids just do the stationary ball handling. And honestly, in my opinion, you don't really like if unless you're a very, very beginner, like stationary ball handling is really not going to help you. If you want to use it for a warm-up, great. But if you're spending a lot of time on it, you're probably not going to improve your ball handling, right? So
Right.
you have to do stuff with movement, right? Challenging your ability to move with the ball, challenging your ability to play with pace. So moving at slower speeds, moving at quicker speeds, understanding how to change heights,
Yes,
right?
that's key.
Understanding how to decelerate, right? So I do like a lot of like freestyles. So this could maybe help some players,
Nice.
like freestyles with constraints. Right, so they have to change speeds after a certain amount of dribbles.
Okay.
They have to change heights after a certain amount of dribble, or something along those lines, where they got to decelerate after a certain amount of moves, or something along those lines. And then do a lot of freestyle dribbling with constraints, and then do a lot of movement-based stuff. So like just getting players to, you know, move in different positions. So like crawl starts, starting, and maybe like push-up position, where they have to just hit, you know, lower, more deceptive angles,
Right.
and then do a lot of stuff with defense. I think that's going to be something huge. A lot of stuff just handling the ball versus defense. Two defenders, one defender, in a certain, you're constrained in space. So different things like that. I think those are going to speed up your ball handling improvement much more than just doing stationary ball handling or just repping out the same move over and over again.
Right.
I think that's what will help players a lot more.
Right. Nice. Nice. And again, I highlighted it earlier in the podcast in terms of just what you and shout out to Coach Coleman, you know, I had the chance to chop it up, sorry, with him last year because he had a London camp. Like you and him,
Nice.
the one thing that I love is that you guys really break down some of the common conventional things that you would see on Instagram or how basketball is taught. You know, like for example, passing doesn't have to be the standard two players facing each other. You work on the chest pass with your elbows out and passing. Like you could add chaos to it, you know, because there will be some times in a game of basketball where the paint might be congested. That's chaos. You might be driving against a double team. That's chaos. Finishing with contact. That's chaos. So you really, you know, highlight and create innovative drills. So when it comes to that topic, you know, how do you enhance players' ability to make effective decisions when they're on the court?
Nice. That's a great question. Yeah, so a lot of our training just involves decision making, so we do a lot of stuff with defense, right? So like one thing is a lot of times, you know, enhanced decision making skills, not all the time, right? But sometimes I'll just start stuff with advantages. So I'll do like a lot of 2-on-1 stuff, 3-on-2, you know, things like that to enhance players' decision making skills and ability just to kind of read the game.
Right.
I'll also just do, you know, 3-on-3, 2-on-2, different things like that to enhance, you know, players' decision making skills. And I'll put them in situations where I want them to work on specific decisions. So maybe it's a pick and roll, right? Hitting either the roller or the lift man. Maybe it's you know, off of a closeout, right? And they have to
Yes.
drive, and now they're reading the weak side as well. What's going on the weak side? Maybe they got a layup, maybe they have a pull up, maybe they can skip it across the court, right? So putting them in different situations and then allowing them to make decisions within that. And
Right.
then sometimes, you know, if I want them to make specific decisions, then we'll set constraints. Or we'll design the drills so that they are experimenting and finding these solutions on their own. I don't like to like overcoach a lot. You know, I think sometimes coaches can overcoach things
Yeah.
and you know, lecture and teach things for too long.
Yeah.
But the best learning is by doing it and getting the experience. It's not always the information that you say. You know, I think coaches. If we act as guides, you know,
Yes.
maybe quick bits of information, right? And then allow the players to, you know, figure it out on their own. That's how, you know, players will retain that information. That's how they will learn and be able to apply it. It's not from all this information, all this detail that we give them. Sometimes, you know, I've noticed and I've learned just from experience and from just studying that too much detail can, you know, cloud a player's brain
Yes,
or overwhelm
absolutely.
them, you know? So sometimes we have to learn how to teach implicitly. We have to learn how to use, you know, less words, you know? So yeah, no, I think decision making is probably the most important skill, I believe, in my opinion, on the court, right? And then you know, I think that's something that can only be trained when you have other people with you. So I think it's important as coaches, you know, we put players in decision-making situations, in workouts, in practices, just because when they're on their own, they're not going to really be able to work on it.
Right, Right, and this is one thing that I really identified in your teaching and how you coach and how you develop players. So I'm curious to get your take on this. When it comes to that decision-making aspect of the game, in your experience, coach, what are some of the key factors you would say that contribute to a player's ability to perform under pressure in crunch time?
That's a good question. So, honestly, I think just like replicating those situations right in practice, putting pressure on players. So maybe like, okay, you do a drill where there's a major disadvantage. You know, so maybe it's 2 on 3, right? Maybe it's 3 on 4. Maybe it is 1 on 2, right? Or maybe you go, you put pressure on a certain team. So maybe you say, okay, you're down 90 to 100. You got to come back and win. So maybe you get a speaker and you just make the environment super crazy. You get a speaker and you put background arena noise in there. You just figure out different ways to challenge and put pressure on athletes to replicate the game. I think that a lot of times coaches will just make things like we mentioned before just too simple, right? So we got to make sure that we are trying to replicate or get as close to replicating the game as possible.
And I think the one thing that I love more, especially as the game evolves and especially as players want to learn, one thing I love, and I kind of learned this a lot, especially interviewing some players at the college level, is they watch film and they watch the game of basketball. Not just the highlights, they actually assess how players score, how a team scores, what make that player successful. So for yourself, what advice do you have for players who just want to improve their basketball IQ and understanding of the game?
Yeah, that's a great question. One thing is just watching the game more, I think obviously is one. And watching just high level basketball, like one thing I've really fell in love with, and I just fell in love with it this year, and I wish I would have started studying it more, is just overseas basketball, the European style basketball, just looking at different continents and just watching how they play. Because I think a lot of times, especially American coaches and American players, they only know, American basketball. They only know the NBA. And when you can go and you can watch other demographics, think that or watch different areas of play, it's just going to enhance your basketball IQ even more, just because you're just seeing just how different the game is played. I mean, how differently you can play it. The ball doesn't always need to be in your hands. So I think that's one thing that's helped me a lot. And then two, just like setting constraints on yourself when you are playing. Like if you go to a pickup, go play pickup, set a constraint on yourself. Maybe you can only score off of, without the ball. So cutting the basket, coming off of screens, in transition, relocating. Scoring, figuring out how to score without the ball. I think that can be one thing that's just enhancing your overall IQ. And then, trying to also look up specific things that teams and coaches may do. So like the Warriors, they love the split action off of feet and posts. So maybe you're just going and you're looking at different actions that occur from certain teams, whether that's an NBA team, whether that's a overseas team. I think one thing is right now that I'm loving right now is just watching the World Cup.
Yeah, me too. Yes, sir. Yes,
It's
sir.
great basketball. It's great basketball, and like it's a shame to see, because I was on Twitter the other day and I just saw a bunch of coaches just tweeting like the best way is the American, the American style of basketball. Like you're
Oh,
just
wow.
dominant, blah blah blah. And it's like,
Yeah.
dude, like are you watching these other games? Like
Man.
don't watch these other, like they're playing honestly. Like yeah, we might be more athletically gifted and we might have better players, but watch these teams. Watch how they play. Like it's just, I think it can expose you to so much more. And like honestly, I enjoy watching, you know, the European game more than I enjoy watching the NBA game now. And just I love watching not even the European, just overseas in general, just
Right,
watching
right.
other areas. Like, it's just so cool to see how the playing styles are just so different
Yes.
within each continent, you know. And it's just amazing basketball to see. And I honestly think it's more of a pure game than, you know, the American way. And I feel like the American way is just a lot of, not everybody, not everywhere,
Yes,
but
no,
just
of course.
a lot of like one-on-one and just understanding how to play with the ball. And
Right.
realistically, a lot of players aren't going to be those guys playing with the ball,
This is true.
right? You know, and yeah, I still work on those things, and I think players should still work with having the ball in their hands, but you should also be working without the ball, understanding how to just play basketball. I don't think we have a lot of players that understand how to play basketball. And one thing I've been really talking about with a lot of people is, like, there's a difference between hoopers and basketball players.
Talk about it, coach.
Yeah, hoopers are the players who only understand how to play with the ball, how to score with the ball in their hands.
Right.
Basketball players are people who just have a high basketball IQ and can do a little bit of everything. And I think the way to build the best athletes is to blend the two together, right?
Yes,
Blend hoopers
absolutely.
and basketball players together. And when you have that's a deadly combo, right?
Right.
I think we only know one, right? At least Americans do. Or we're not only, but, you know, we lean more towards the hooper side of things, right?
Yes.
And I think it hurts us, you know. And I think, and that's all a lot of American kids, you know, and coaches and players watch too, is just that
Yes.
highlight. You know, culture is just looking at all these highlight plays, which I get it, you know, it's cool, but it's not what basketball is,
Right.
right? And so, you know, I think if we can blend the two together, we'll get some very, very good basketball players. And we're seeing it with you know, the NBA players right now, who are the best players, guys, overseas guys, right?
Right.
And they're able to do a little bit of both, right? Like Jokic is freaking amazing. Like, there's
Man.
no doubt. He is the best player in the world right now.
Right.
But
Right.
do a little bit of both, right? And that's what makes him so good. You know, so it's something that I really want to help, you know, coaches, trainers, and players just understand. It's not just having the ball in your hands, and that's what a lot of training you just see nowadays is having the ball in your hands.
Yes.
And I think it almost can hurt players. You know, yes, it's
Right.
good, because I think, players now are way more skilled than ever before,
Yes, 100%.
but they're also not as smart, you know, right now. I feel like they're just spamming, you know, all these different moves and just under like spam. Like, it's just they're not, you know, they're not. It's not the smartest time to use these things, right?
Right.
You know, I could talk about that, you know, forever.
No, same. Same.
But it's just something I really want to try to push, and I want players to understand there's so much more to the game.
Right. See, and that's what I think is it's an interesting conversation because I'm not sure, Coach, if you saw that clip that went viral. I think it was on Twitter of Steph Curry at his camp doing some ball handling drills with a tennis ball against the wall, and directly to his left was Luka doing it, and he was like fumbling, stumbling, and the conversation was like, wait a minute, how come Steph can do it so well and Luka can't do it? But yeah, Luka gets buckets. Like it was interesting how, you know, and it was like some people in the comments that was kind of saying, well, you know, Steph is clearly the better player, but at least from my perspective is that, you know, don't get me wrong, both players are extremely skilled. I mean, one player, Steph Curry, is his hand-eye coordination is crazy. But if you look at Luka, he might not look the best as an individual when it comes to just drills or some of the fancy hand-eye coordination stuff. But when it comes to him playing real basketball, if you put him in a real game scenario, he's picking apart the defense. He knows his change of pace, change of speed, change of direction. He's just reading the game and making on time, on target passes, you know. So definitely that just kind of showed me that, you know, we don't want players, and that's one thing that you push as well, you know, is that you don't want players to be workout warriors. You know, like you score 10 out of 10 in the gym when it's by yourself, just you and the basketball, but in a game, when you're in that same spot receiving that same pass, you can't knock it down, you know. And that's what I think you're so good at, is you translate the skills that they're learning to real game scenarios, you know. So I absolutely love that. Love that.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Yeah, no, that's each year I just look back at like how far I've come. Like I don't do stuff that I did last year. I don't do stuff that I did 2 years ago.
Right.
And it's funny too, because like each year I think, oh wow, I'm good at this. But then I go back and I look and I'm like, oh shit, that was bad. That wasn't good. That wasn't even good. Like I look back at 2021 and I'm like, wow, was I really doing that type of stuff? You know, and
then, right.
You know, look back, you know, it's last year too. And it's like, wow. And so it's really cool to just to see, you know, how far I've grown and how far I come each and every year. And that's one thing that I see a lot too, is like coaches stay the same. They don't evolve. Right. And I think that's a lot of American coaches too. A lot of them that I talk to is like, they feel like they have the blueprint already. And they're kind of been the same, you know, each and every year. And it kind of sucks too, because we preach to our players, like, each year we should come back growing and improving and adding something new to their game. They should be, you know, growing. But I feel like sometimes coaches stay stagnant, right?
Yes.
They're not doing what they preach, right? They're not going out and researching, you know, skill acquisition. They're not studying the game.
Right.
You know, maybe they study the game, but they're not like training, or they're not changing the way that they maybe present drills, or the way that they present information, the way that they teach things, right? There's so much more that goes into training.
Yes.
Other than actually, right? You have to understand how to communicate with players. And I see, know how to communicate.
Right.
You know, act with players, how to build relationships. You know, you have to understand, you know, when to speak up, when to not talk, right? You know, so there's just so many different things that go into training. But a lot of times just coaches are the same coach and trainer that they were 2 years ago. And that's kind of sad. You know, I feel like every year we should be growing and adding something new, you know, to our quote unquote bag.
Indeed. Indeed. And I just add on to that. Shout out to Coach Polite over there at Rise Above Academy. He told me this quote on the podcast that, again, sticks with me till this day. You know, his mentor told him that, you know, change is inevitable, but growth is optional, you know. And that's just kind of what you said in terms of, you've got coaches who, and even for myself, coach, I'm going to be transparent, you know, in my early coaching years, that because I've been fortunate enough to be coaching basketball for about 12-13 years now. Like when those first 3 to 4 years, what I was doing that fourth year is exactly what I was doing my first year of coaching. You know, like there was no real growth. Don't get me wrong, the environment was changing, who I was coaching was changing, the level of basketball was changing, but you know, I still had a lot of old school mindsets, old school beliefs, kind of basic drills that could add a touch of spice to make it more innovative and interesting. So I mean,
for sure,
it's super key as a coach, and like you said, you know, just to continue to grow, continue to be a student, continue to look at nutrition or injury prevention and things of that nature. And one thing that really stood out to me earlier on in your story when you was coming up as a kid, coach, is that you kind of had that routine of, you would wake up at 5, get some shots up before school, and even after school, you was making sure you was heading down to the gym to practice. So especially, you know, just for some of the players who are listening, you know, how would you, or how can players effectively manage their time and balance skill training with other commitments such as school or work?
Probably what I did, you know, how hard I worked probably resulted in me getting injured so much, right? Like I would wear myself out. Like I would be, like I said, I'd work out 5 to 6 days a week, 2 to 3 times a day.
Wow.
Right. So I'd be working out a ton, and I didn't get proper rest. I didn't always take care of my body, right? And so I think ultimately that's what led to me getting injured so much. You know, so now what I would, you know, preach is you know, get your work in, but it doesn't, like, I feel like we push this a lot on kids, is like, you know, you need to be grinding, you need to be in the gym, which, yes, you need to be grinding, but understand how to grind. Understand what is an effective grind, right? It doesn't need to be so many workouts in a day. You don't need to be, you know, going 3-4 times a day, right? It's just like, you know, find your time to go, you know, get some quality time in and then get out, you know. And one thing is that I don't really, you know, I don't play basketball a lot anymore. You know, I play in the men's league here and there, and I'll play some pickup, you know, once a week, twice a week. But when I try to work out 3 to 5 times a week.
Nice.
My workouts are anywhere minutes, right? And I'm just getting it in, and it's purposeful, it's intentful, and it's like, maybe, you know, some players probably will need some more, but I feel like you don't need as much as we always push or we always think.
Right.
I feel like we can get so much done as long as you are, you know, looking at the quality instead of the quantity, right?
Right.
So I would say, you know, I think everyone has the same 24 hours in a day. You know, it's just about how you manage it and about how you plan things out. You know, maybe sometimes if you're on social media, you know, 2-3 hours a day, take out an hour, you know, go get some work in. Maybe sometimes that might require you to get up early. Like my senior year, I had to get up early. Like I don't remember what day it was, but there was 2 days a week where I literally had to get up at 4 a.m. and go work out because I couldn't work out the rest of the day.
Okay.
And so, you know, if you really want it, you just got to find the time to go do it. And you can squeeze it in there. Doesn't, like I said, doesn't need to be too long. But, you know, you got to just try to, you know, look at your schedule. I'll try to plan things out. Look at my schedule. Okay. You know, and give yourself time blocks. Like, okay, all right, I can only be on social media for 45 minutes today. I got homework. I got to be doing my homework in 2 to 3 hours today. All right. Okay, cool. That gives me this amount of time to work out.
Right.
Right. You know, so just really trying to plan and schedule things out, I think will really help. I know a lot of players make excuses like, oh, I have this amount of homework. But, you know, there is a kid that has the same amount of homework as you. That mm-hmm. is able.
There we go.
Yep.
Exactly.
You know, so just lay your schedule out, plan it out, you know, allot time to each thing that you're doing. And then, you know, you're always going to find that time to be able to work out and get your work in.
Nice. Nice. And just the final two questions, Coach, before we get into the third quarter, which I like to call the quick hitter segment, where I'm just going to ask you some interesting questions. I'll leave it like that. And then the fourth quarter, definitely we're going to have a little bit of fun. So just the last two, Coach, is what are some of the tips or even, let's say, strategies for players to maintain their motivation, that hunger, and having them staying dedicated to their skill development journey?
Yeah, this is something that is, I feel like, is hard for a lot of athletes, and I feel like it's because they almost take the game too seriously, right? They put too much pressure on themselves. They identify with basketball. I know a lot of players, like, their identity is straight basketball. Like, that's all they think about. That's all they do. That's all they care about. And it puts so much stress on them. And when they don't perform, you know, it ruins their day, ruins their week, right? It ruins their month. And I think just taking a step back and maybe not caring as much, right? Finding times to detach from the game.
Yes.
You know, set days, set times where you just can't even touch basketball. You can't watch basketball. You got to get away. Go spend time with your family, friends, play video games.
Right.
TV, go for a walk, you know, figure out ways you can just detach each day or each week. Just find those times because, you know, I think that's where the lack of motivation stems from, is just putting too much pressure on yourself and just identifying with basketball and making it your personality and who you are. So if you can just find those times to just get away and get away from the game, I think that's going to be huge.
Nice. Nice. And the final one, Coach, I'm super curious to get your take on this, is there any highlights that stand out to you the most? And also, what were some of the lowlights that made you a better coach?
So highlights of just like my coaching career?
Correct. Yep.
Nice. Honestly, I think, you know, I think of everything almost like as a highlight, man. I don't think, you know, one is better than the other.
Okay.
You know, one thing that I love to experience on, I think that is, it really helped me grow, was going to Europe and just studying the game and training you know, one of our pro players training a bunch of other athletes in different countries. I think that was a really cool experience and really helped me get outside of my bubble and understand what other cultures are doing, not only just with basketball, but just with, you know, just in life and how they're operating. So that was a really cool experience. I guess that could be like my highlight, I guess you could say.
Right.
But I try to treat every day like as a highlight, and every day as a special day.
That's what's up.
And
That's what's up.
yeah, I guess low part. That one's kind of tough. You know, there's been times, can't pinpoint an exact time, but there's been
Right.
times, you know, where I almost did quit. Like I mentioned earlier, I almost did give up, just because things obviously weren't going the way that I wanted them to go. I wasn't getting the results that I wanted. You know, and it was hard to make a living out of it at points. So, you know, it made it tough. But yeah, I mean, like I said earlier, you know, I can't lose if I never quit, right?
That's
So
true.
I can't fail if I never quit. So, yeah, I don't, it's hard to pinpoint an exact time, but I guess those are some of the feelings I felt, you know, throughout my coaching journey.
Nice. Nice. Now, coach, we're going to get into the third quarter of the podcast, what I like to call this the quick hitter segment. So, the first question, coach, is what would you say in the game of basketball? What would you say, coach, is a skill that is taught by many, but only mastered by a few?
Oh, wow. That is a great question. I never thought about this before. A skill that is taught by many but mastered by few.
Yes.
Pace. Patience. Pace and patience. I think that's it right there.
Why do you mean that? I'm curious.
Yeah, because I think a lot of coaches try to teach pace and try to say so many things about pace, and they're not really teaching it. And I feel like it's like you watch a lot of players when they're, especially like younger players, they're very sped up, they're very quick, you know, jittery, and it gets them into trouble, right? And
Right.
I think it's a skill that not a lot of people have, is just playing with. I mean, as you get older at higher levels, right, then a lot more players have it. But I want to say, you know, for the high school athletes and kind of everybody younger, it's something that's hard to find, I guess, unless you're like one of the more advanced players. It's harder to find.
Right. Okay. I like it. I like it. Next one. Best piece of advice you ever received.
Wow. It's a great question. I'm trying to think if I can think of something off the top of my head. Best.
Take your
I guess I
time.
go back to the quote that I gave you earlier. You know, you can't, before you succeed, you know, you're gonna fail.
Yes, absolutely.
I don't remember exactly who told me that, but that's just something that just you know, stuck with me.
Nice. Next one, if it wasn't for basketball, filling the blank. Sorry, ask that again. If it wasn't for basketball, I wouldn't have learnt filling the blank about myself.
Oh, these are some good questions, man. Came right. Wasn't for basketball. All right, so say it one more time. Sorry. If it
I got
wasn't
you,
for
I got you.
basketball. Yeah.
If it wasn't for basketball, I wouldn't have learnt filling the blank about myself.
Okay, about myself. Okay. Wow. I would say probably just like how much of an impact I could have, right? Like just being like an inspiration, you know, motivate, someone who can motivate, inspire, and just kind of push the next generation.
Yes.
I feel like this is kind of like I mentioned earlier, like this is my purpose, and I feel like this is led me down many different avenues where I'm really able to be like a mentor.
Yes.
And I don't know if I would have found that out about myself, you know, if it wasn't for basketball.
Nice. And the final one before we get to the fourth quarter, we're gonna have a little bit of fun, is what would the title of your autobiography be?
Title. Dream Chaser. Dream
Okay.
Chaser.
Okay, I like that. I like that. That's what's up. I bet we're in the fourth quarter now, coach. So this is where I like to have a little bit of fun with my guests. So here's how it's gonna work. So I will give you 10 seconds and you need to name five things. So for example, I might say, Coach Gabe, I'm gonna give you to 10 seconds to name, I don't know, five point guards in the NBA. And
Okay.
when you hear this countdown,
10, 9, 8,
that's when you could just
7,
start listing them
6,
off.
5,
All right.
Yeah?
Yep. Sounds good.
Perfect. Perfect. Okay, let's start nice and easy. So, Coach Gabe, the first one is you've got 10 seconds to name five NBA players.
LeBron, KD,
10, 9,
wow, I
8,
can't. Jokic,
7, 6,
Anthony Davis.
5, 4, 3,
Nice.
2. I can't believe
Nice.
that. Putting the pressure on me. That's kind of, I didn't believe that. I caught up for a second. I slumped. Makes you think.
I bet. Next one, starting strong. You got 10 seconds to name five NBA teams.
Ten, nine,
Lakers, Clippers,
eight,
Warriors,
seven,
Suns,
six,
Celtics.
five,
Man,
four.
with 5 seconds left on the clock. Okay. Okay, right. Now, coach, I'm gonna give you the heads up. These next two guests in the past have stumbled upon because they do hear these names, but it's only around a certain time or point of the season. So let's see how you handle these ones. So, Coach Gay, you got 10 seconds to name five NBA coaches.
Oh
Ten,
my gosh. Oh
nine,
my gosh. Monty
seven,
Williams.
six, five, four, three, two,
Wow.
one.
Whoa, I stumped. I forgot everything. And honestly, I can't even lie. I don't really know a lot. I probably
Right.
do. I do know like five probably, but it's hard.
Right.
I don't really keep up with too many NBA coaches, so that was a tough one.
Right. It's all good. Right. Next one. 10 seconds to name five international players in the NBA.
Ten, nine,
Josh Giddey,
Here we go.
seven,
Jokic,
six,
Joel
five,
Embiid,
Huh? Three,
Zenkov,
two,
and
one.
Sabonis.
Ooh.
I get that one off? Did I
You
get that
did.
one off?
You did. You just made it. That was clutch. That was clutch. I mean, the referees had to go back and check the replay camera, but it was good. It was good.
There we go. Nice.
Okay, final three. Final three, coach. Okay, now these ones is more down to personal preference. So the pressure is off just a little bit, but you're in the lead, so let's keep it that way. So, coach, 10 seconds to name five basketball movies.
Ten,
Hoop
nine,
Dreams, Love and
eight,
Basketball,
seven, six,
Forever a
five,
Game. I think
four,
that's
three,
from
two, one.
oh my God.
Ooh, he got it. Just okay.
Oh,
Okay.
I don't know if I got five.
Oh, that was top four. Okay, I'll take it. I'll
Okay,
take it. That was a clean four. Okay, final two, coach. 10 seconds. Give me your top five players of all time.
10, nine,
Kobe,
eight,
MJ,
seven,
LeBron,
six, five,
Jokic,
four,
Curry.
three,
Ooh,
two.
okay, Jokic is in there. Okay, I like it. I like it. And the final one, coach, before we wrap up, is name five artists that get you hyped before a game or a workout.
Ten, nine,
Blast,
eight,
Dino,
seven,
Nipsey,
six,
Drake,
five,
Oof.
four,
and
three,
K-Tronada.
Ooh, what you know about K-Tronada, coach? Okay, yes, sir. Yes, sir. Canada, yeah. Stand up. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, that's what's up. Right, listeners, I don't know about you guys, but for me, honestly, man, it's been a absolute treat being able to connect with Coach Gabe, man. And again, listeners, don't worry, the link will be in the description. But Coach, for the people who are listening that's want to develop their game, take it to a whole new level and just see what you got going on and how they can learn from you, where can they find you?
Yeah, Game Time Elite Training on all platforms. Any platform that you got should be on there.
Nice. Perfect. Listeners, this is myself, Coach D, and the forever a student changing the game, Coach Gabe from Game Time Elite Training, signing out.